Welcome to the Hashtag MoLedge Podcast. We are fortunate and luckier than any of you listening probably, to be broadcasting this from downtown Poplar Bluff, Missouri, in the offices of Todd Richardson. Glad to be joined by the speakers. Mr. Speaker, welcome.
Thanks. Welcome home.
Thank you. And the treasurer of HRCC, also a Poplar Bluff native, Eddie Justice. Eddie, welcome to the Hashtag MoLedge Podcast.
Thanks for letting me be on.
Top of the podcast, every week, we want to thank our sponsors, Republic Services, the Greater St. Louis Area Chamber of Commerce, Farm Bureau, always very generous, and the Carpenters Union. Got to start off with, we always start this podcast in election season talking about our poll. The newest Missouri Times poll, this time using Remington polling out of Kansas City, shows Chris Koster's increased his lead to 47-37, a 10-point lead. Eddie Justice, you talk to people in politics all over the state. Koster's lead's growing while Trump's lead's growing. Does that surprise you?
No, because of the way the campaigns are being run right now and the way that their scheduling is for when they're going to roll out attack ads. And we're still early in this short general election cycle. I think until there's 3 weeks left, it's probably going to stay like this and could even grow.
Todd, you've seen a lot of campaigns back to even when your father was in the legislature. This is a unique cycle where the NRA and the Farm Bureau are not at your candidate's rally for governor. They're with a kind of Republican. I asked Eddie Justice on This Week in Missouri Politics last week. You have a conservative running and a Republican. Is it hard for – are we seeing in these numbers some of the Republicans not coming home and supporting the Republican?
I don't think so. And I think, you know, the first thing is, I mean, look, Eric Greitens is a Republican. He is a conservative Republican, and I think he'll be a conservative governor. But I think what you see in these poll results is what we've seen throughout the entire election cycle, which is you have an electorate that's very fluid and very dynamic right now, which is why you've seen wide swings in the polls both nationally and in the state. So these polls are going to tighten as the race gets closer. They always do. Missouri is a state that's I think going to be very receptive to Eric's message as that gets out there. Now, look, the endorsements, obviously, I'm sure Eric would like to have the endorsement of the NRA, and I'm sure he'd like to have the endorsement of the Farm Bureau.
He said on Camo X, it didn't matter to him.
But at the end of the day, the NRA endorsement and the NRA's policy for endorsing candidates favors incumbents. Eric's not one. He doesn't have a voting record. And I think the fact that he doesn't have a voting record is something that's going to resonate with voters. Look, we see in Donald Trump a very sincere frustration with what's going on, particularly in Washington, but also at every other level of government. And I think Eric wants to be a change agent, and I think that's what he'll bring to the table.
If you had to predict where the race ends up right now, what would you predict it?
I think it's a very close race. I think it's a very close race into late October, and I think by the time it gets to Election Day, it'll be a coin flip.
What do you think the race ends up at?
Oh, man, that's like the speaker said, that's a tough one to guess. If I had to guess, I'd say it'll be 2 points or less if everything continues like we expect them to. And it's impossible to say which way it'd go.
I think right now it looks good for Koster. Not only does he have a lead, it's grown steadily since the primary. But I've always thought Eric Greitens was probably the most likely candidate to win the primary. And I kind of think he's the most likely candidate to win the general. There's just some things where not being around politics helps you. There's certain things you won't say, Mr. Speaker, because you know about government. You're educated about state government. If you're not educated about it, it's easier to say certain things. And I think we may be in a sense right now where people don't want a detailed policy breakdown. They kind of like you shooting a howitzer. And I think Eric Greitens may have his finger on the pulse of the state right now. I'm not sure what that means for you guys in January, though. Make for an interesting session.
It will make for an interesting session, but look, we've been yearning for a partner on the second floor for a long time. I think Eric can be that partner. There's some big things that we'd like to do for the state that we think move the economy in a better direction, and so I think Eric's the guy to do that.
We always poll three races with the Missouri Times. This week, Remington polled the Secretary of State's race. It showed Jay Ashcroft up 48-38. Over Robin Smith. That's not surprising to me, really. I mean, J. Ashcroft's father is the former U.S. Attorney General, Senator, Governor. And J. Ashcroft's a nice guy. I think this is a really challenging race for her to change the dynamics on.
Well, I think so, and I think the issue sets right now lend themselves very well to the campaign that Jay has run. He has run a campaign in the primary and now into the general, built on bringing some integrity back to our elections. when you see the kinds of high-profile problems we've had out of the Secretary of State's office in managing elections over the last year, I don't think it's a surprise at all that Jay's message is resonating. People want to make sure that we're going to have a Secretary of State that protects the integrity of the election process and does so in a way that's better than what we've had over the last two cycles.
And it just, I mean, every week it seems like, every time they have an election in St. Louis, it's like a huge advertisement for Jay Ashcroft. I mean, taking away the name ID advantage, if I had to put $100 on any of these races, I'd put it on Jay Ashcroft right now.
Oh, there's no doubt about it because name alone. But, you know, Robin Smith, I think, kind of made a little mistake and waited too long to raise her money. She needed to get the word out there who she was earlier in the race, even in the primary, and she waited too long to raise her money, and I think she's up against the wall, and I don't think she's got the time to make up the ground that she would need to be a factor in this race.
Do you think it's do you think there's a legitimate concern where she is that she's never ran before? I think folks in St. Louis see her name as a they recognize it from the news. The rest of us don't really recognize it that much from, I mean, if you're not in St. Louis, I mean, local news is a pretty segmented audience right now. I think that she has a real challenging place to run from, and in a tide where I think we all think Donald Trump wins the state of Missouri. How does she win her race if Trump carries Missouri by 6 or 8 or 10?
It would be, I mean, I'd hate to say anything's impossible, but it would be as close to impossible as anything else in this election, I'd say.
The last race we did was the Attorney General's race. This was the most talked about primary outside of the governor's race. It's been a little more quiet. It shows Josh Hawley with a 9-point lead, 47-38 over Teresa Hensley. I think it comes as a bit of a surprise to some folks around Missouri politics because Josh Hawley is new to it, but the guy knows how to run a campaign. And I think he proved that in the summer. And I have to say, these numbers not even withstanding, he's the front runner going into the fall, right?
No question about it. I think Josh is in a very strong position. He ran a primary campaign that was based on some issues that we know resonate with Missouri voters, mm-hmm. and that's opposition to Obamacare. That's been a theme in the last two election cycles. It's still a theme in this one because people see it really stifling small business. We've got a trailer manufacturer in South Butler County here that has leveled out their employment at 50 employees because they can't afford to comply with that mandate. Their 51st employee will cost that company $300,000 to hire that 51st employee. So I think Josh has done a great job of making that issue front and center. And I think people want an attorney general that's going to stand up and take on the federal government and some of these high-profile issues that the state's trying to deal with.
I think Josh Hawley proved himself as a really good campaigner. He's able to raise money from outside Missouri, unlike anyone outside maybe Greitens. But I would have to say on election night, he must have been elated by his win, his margin of victory. But nothing against Jake Zimmerman. Teresa Hensley is a much more challenging competitor, right, Eddie Justin? I mean, she's...
Yeah, I would think she would be. But with the what Todd was saying about the how well he campaigned and how well he ran that campaign in the primary, on top of that, with the Trump effect and him being an outsider, these poll numbers don't surprise me because of that general idea. I mean, he's riding the wave.
Yeah, I think that might be right. But if there is a pushback, I think she's one of the people that are positioned to take advantage of that. She's somebody that could make this race close just because she's been a prosecutor. Right. And while that didn't matter in the primary, traditionally in general elections, somebody with some prosecutorial experience has mattered. And being a woman, and I think there is a resume there that she can contrast with his. To there certainly be the underdog, but of all the down-ballot races, I mean, I think she may be best positioned to make it very close, her and Russ Carter.
Yeah, I mean, she's definitely one of the better candidates they could have put up for that position. She actually has a resume of being in a courtroom. But unfortunately, after the primary, you know, when Josh Hawley went against somebody who had a lot of experience in a courtroom, obviously the voters didn't pay a lot of attention to that.
Interesting. We'll have new results every week. We're going to pull a couple of the statewide ballot initiatives next week, along with the governor's race. Always want to thank Republic Services, the St. Louis Area Chamber of Commerce, and the Carpenters Union for allowing us to bring not only the polling but the hashtag Mobile Edge podcast. Let's talk about a couple of those. So cigarette taxes are on the ballot now, and the marijuana initiative's off the ballot. Todd, are you surprised that I've not seen very many states? We have publications in Nevada and Arkansas. When they hire these professional firms to get signatures, they usually get the signatures. It's rare that they miss. How did the marijuana folks miss?
Well, I don't have a good explanation.
Well, I teed you up for a good joke there. You didn't take it.
Maybe some of the people gathering signatures were using the product. I don't know. But look, it's a surprise it's not on the ballot given the volume of signatures they had. But it's been through the process now. It's not going to be on the ballot. And the others will. It'll be very interesting to see how Missourians treat both of those two cigarette tax proposals on the ballot. They've defeated them in the past. The margins generally have been fairly close. So we'll see what happens in November.
And it's, as you talk to a lot of members of the legislature, especially in the Republican caucus, it's my take that there's a lot of members that support medical marijuana, a really tight lockdown thing, but they're not sure the public is there yet. Does this affect that? I think there's a subtle trend towards medical marijuana, maybe even in Missouri, but they just don't seem like they want to cast a vote in favor of it on the record yet. Does this change that?
I think this will move people closer to it. I've talked to a lot of people who, like you say, have eased a little closer to it just because of the fact of the environment and our culture across the country in other states. But like you said, they're not ready to. I think it will be a few more sessions before we get a group of people in there that are ready to put their name on the record to say that we're willing to take that first step into this world to see if it can do something for the people of Missouri.
We've seen a lot of the age difference seems to be important. Like younger Republicans have a little more libertarian streak. They don't care. They don't want the government telling you what you can smoke.
Right.
But there's an older demographic there of especially a high population that vote that still view pot as bad. Todd, do you think there's a – give me the sense of is it 10 years from now that pot is not that big a deal anymore?
I don't think it's even that long in a lot of parts of the country. What's interesting about Missouri is, you know, we're kind of a collection of different state cultures. You know, as we're sitting here right now, we're much more part of the South. If you get to Kansas City, you know, you're much more in kind of a Western sensibility, and you get to St. Louis and you're clearly in the Midwest. So I think as you've seen this issue evolve in other states, that experience is going to have a lot to do with where Missouri goes. I think the ballot proposal that was out there, I'm thankful it's not on the ballot because I think it was the wrong way to go. It would have put the issue in our Constitution, which would have made it next to impossible to fix problems with it. If this issue is going to be resolved, I think it's better resolved by the legislature, and I think it's better resolved by taking small steps.
It is a little scary to run the risk of being California,
yeah,
where everything's a proposition.
I mean, look, yeah, and you look at the proposal that was out there on the ballot. We can call it medical marijuana all we want. It was essentially full-blown recreational marijuana. When all you have to do to get a marijuana card is to say, well, I have a little anxiety today. I don't know anybody that can't walk in the doctor's office and say, man, I'm feeling a little stressed from my job. That's not the right way to go. If we're going to have a medical marijuana bill, we ought to make it a true medical marijuana bill and see how that experience goes before we expand any further.
Let's talk about an interesting race. The race in the 78th District, Representative Penny Hubbard was defeated in a redo election by Bruce Franks. I think it says a lot about the changing demographics of the city.
Yep.
May say a lot about the upcoming mayor's race. I think there's the folks that supported Bruce Franks. If I'm Tashara Jones, I'm very happy today by that result. There's a certain type of voter that turned out there that may turn out again. I think if you look at it objectively, but you've got a guy coming in, and we talked to him, we interviewed him at the Missouri Times. You know, he believes his election was very transformative, and he thinks that the issues he cares about are, you know, ringing a bell in the state now. Penny Hubbard's a pretty liberal vote. I don't think she voted with the majority very often. Probably pretty similar to Bruce Franks' voting records, likely to be. As a speaker, though, how do you deal with a member that won this election that's very big in his area, but candidly, by the time you get to, you know, Franklin County, it's not a big deal. How do you temper those expectations at leading the body?
Well, I think every state rep has the ability to represent their district and 35,000 people. That representative, soon to be Representative Franks, is going to represent, are going to expect him to come to Jeff City and represent those interests. What you saw in that election, and I think what we've seen across the country, whether it's on the Republican side of the ticket or it's on the Democrat side of the ticket, is a lot of people yearning for change. And it may be a different version of change that they expect in that district than people down in Butler County do, but they want to see something different. They want problems being solved. So, look, we'll be ready to work with Representative Franks and other members of the Democrat caucus, as we've done before, where we can find common ground. But there are going to be times where I'm sure our perspective is going to be very different.
And it looks to me like the Republican caucus is getting more conservative. especially the reps that are going into the Senate. And you see now there's a movement, a pretty significant movement in the city of St. Louis, especially, to have more of a Bernie Sanders socialist-type candidate. How do you think those mesh? I mean, it's really hard to put together Ron Paul and Bernie Sanders and make a public policy.
Yeah, the speaker's talking about finding common ground. We'll put those two together, and there's going to be a real struggle to find common ground. You know, it, fiscally speaking, conservatives, I think, are running the show in Missouri. Mm-hmm. And that's good because we need, with a balanced budget we have to have and with all the demands that are going on in Missouri for money, public money, we've got to have a fiscally responsible government. But when it comes to the two sides of the aisle getting more extreme, you know, that it seems like the farther we get down this road, the more difficult it's going to be for the speaker to cross the aisle and find that common ground. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but it seems to be the voters are putting people in that are farther apart from the urban and rural. You know, you've got the urban people that are going farther to the left. The Democrat Party's moving farther to the left. And then you got the outstate folks in Southwest Missouri that are pretty steadfast in their fiscal responsibility and their conservative principles, and they're not going to be moving either. So it's continuing to alienate rural and urban.
Let's talk about an issue that does break down rural and urban. You know, I noticed in the state Senate in veto session, there's really no more pro-gun Democrats in the state Senate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's no pro-life Democrats in the state Senate. And there's no Democrats outside of St. Louis and Jackson County. It looked to me like with the gun bill, the big victory on your side holding together, you'd lost, folks had resigned. It looked like you even brought in some of the folks that lost their primaries to vote for the gun bill. And you had to feel good leaving veto session. Is there anything that happened that you wanted to veto that you didn't override?
No, I mean, we almost ran the table with the bills we brought up, 13 overrides between the House and Senate. Overall, we were very happy with the outcome. And, you know, we had some high-profile bills in there, but there were also some other good pieces of legislation that, you know, didn't get a lot of ink after veto session. Take a look at the employee stock ownership tax break. You know, we talk all the time, and people on the left talk all the time about income inequality. Well, here you've got a corporate structure that allows the employees to actually own the company, and you've got a Democrat governor that vetoes a tax break that would make that kind of corporate structure more likely. Baffles me, but I'm glad our majority stuck together to do some of those things. And overall, we were really happy with the result. A testament to my caucus sticking together on some tough votes. Some of those votes were easier for some people than others. But for the most part, they stuck together, and we had a pretty good day.
Hey, just as I noticed something about veto session, there's always a tension between the House and the Senate. The Senate, it takes them a little longer to do things by design. Sometimes it does. I noticed they were moving through Senate bills, and there was a couple strategic recesses to wait for them to move some House bills. But in the end, it looked like a pretty decent balance. The House got their share of bills brought up and overridden. I noticed there were some representatives kind of looking over across the rotunda, wondering when that was going to happen, though, right?
Yeah, there was some hesitation by some folks about whether or not the Senate was going to hold out on some stuff for leverage and things like that. But in the end, the Senate came through, and I think a lot of that has to do with leadership, both in the House and the Senate. I mean, they were working together. They were, you know, there's always going to be some tension, but it was good to see them working together and that the leadership was actually being, the leadership we saw was leadership that was needed. But, you know, it was very encouraging for me to see the Senate doing some things that needed to be done that they don't necessarily like to do in order to get some things
done. Respect for the House,
too.
There was clearly a respect for the House by the end of the day there.
Absolutely. They knew that they were not dealing with pushovers in the House, and they were going to have to come to the table and you know, be fair.
Todd, just the three of us in the room here in our audience, it looked like there was some good communication going.
Yeah. One of the things...
Was it all day? Was it the morning, and then it lulled a little? And was there a back... It looked like the end result was good, but maybe towards the middle of the day, you might be wondering what they're getting done over there.
Yeah, look, I mean, I get asked all the time about the Senate process, and I'm not over there, so I try not to make too many comments on it. But we had a healthy level of communication back and forth throughout the day, and the Senate knew we wanted to get some House bills done, and started, I think, their second bill up was the photo ID bill, which was a priority for the House, Representative Alferman's bill. So once they got that done, and look, we knew we were going to have to do a little waiting for them to finish uh, to finish their work. And but they got through the photo ID bill, they got through the gun bill, and then sort of the dam broke after that. So I was happy with the way they worked with us.
Let me ask you one thing about parliamentary behind the cloak and dagger of politics. It was interesting to me that Democrats made them filibuster two bills during veto session. It looks to me like, you know, it's nice to have a Senate that stops some things, but moves some stuff. There were deals cut. The voter ID bill was pretty light. If you're a Democrat and you're going to have a voter ID bill, you probably want that one.
Yeah.
And there were some concessions made to bring those to votes, but they still made them filibuster it. It looks to me like that was a waste of time. And if you the filibuster and the PQ, making that those PQs are easier to do the more times you do them. Do you think they made a mistake forcing that again and makes it easier to do in January?
Well, I do think they made a mistake. You know, we've had a pretty long-standing, there's been a long-standing tradition in the Senate that you don't use the filibuster during veto session. I think that only one other time when Senator Justice was in the Senate that I remember.
And I think that's the one thing she's been criticized for. I mean, that was a deal cut. She didn't keep it in veto session. And maybe some of the pre-cues you saw the next session started with that.
Yeah, I also think here, you know, most of us saw that filibuster for what it was, which was a show. Yeah. And it wasn't a real filibuster. There was no real belief that it was going to kill or stop a piece of legislation. And so for our members who are sitting there waiting around for 4 hours, it's a little frustrating to have to watch them go through that process. I do think, though, I don't think that you're going to see a carryover of what happened in veto session into regular session, because I think most of the Senate, even the Democrat members of the Senate, saw that filibuster and ultimately the PQ for what it was.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. You know, normally the majority's chastised for overexerting their power. The veto session PQs, I think the minority's been chastised for not keeping their deal they made.
Yeah, there was no question that those bills were going to get to a vote.
Yeah.
That was never in doubt.
And I think the majority may have been right to make that happen and prove their point.
Yeah, I think so. You can't have, and in this case, it wasn't even a united Democrat caucus opposing bringing these things to a vote. You had, you know, one or two senators, and so I think the majority was right to not let one or two senators prevent those things from coming to a vote.
Always want to thank on the Hashtag Podcast Republic Services, the Carpenters Union, and the St. Louis Chamber of Commerce for sponsoring it. Let's talk about some of these House races. Eddie Justice, when you look at the races that are up and the seats that are competitive, there's two seats in Clay County that kind of start the list. Does Mary Hill finish off upset, defeated Representative King? Can she win the general election?
Oh, absolutely she can, because she's got the support of the rest of the caucus. There are people that are excited about the potential for her to get in there because of some of the stands that she's made over the, you know, the previous years not being in the House. So she's done a lot of work to try to get some of the issues done that mean a lot to a lot of the House members, and they're returning the favors and getting in there and working really hard. It'll be a hard race. It's going to be a close race, but yeah, by all means, she can win it.
Mr. Speaker, is Kevin Corlew come back?
Absolutely. No question about it. Kevin's going
to... Good recruit by the Democrats, though. Probably their top recruit of the cycle.
Well, I think... Look, it's a good recruit, but when I think you put... when you put their candidate versus ours, it's going to be a very favorable matchup in that district. That's a district that wants a common sense conservative in that seat. That district is fairly conservative, and I think Kevin's got... Or excuse me. I think... We've got a very good message to tell to the people.
He's a good legislator, too. It looks like this is the Democrats may want to beat him so he's not Senator Corlew at some point as well.
Well, who knows? I mean, the way these races play out, my hope is that Kevin has a good, long, solid career as a state rep, and I think he can do some real good there. But Kevin's going to win that race.
Eddie Justin, Jefferson County, there's places that undoubtedly Donald Trump runs better than others. He might be able to be elected emperor in Jefferson County, right? I mean, when you saw his popularity in that primary, does it make you less concerned about Jefferson County races?
Well, it's been a common worry, or not a worry, but an interest with people that as they watched the Trump effect and watched all these people come out and vote for Trump that hadn't voted in 20 years. I mean, they came out of the bushes, out of the woodwork, and voted. So how it affects the down ballot will be a very interesting aspect of this election. I don't think anybody can predict exactly how it's going to happen. We hope that it's going to be a tide that rolls in Missouri in order to accomplish more of the down ballot wins for us and gets the speaker a bigger caucus. So I think the Trump effect is going to turn out to work well for the Republicans in Missouri.
Maybe the tide is raised down there, Dan Shaw. maybe Representative Scobo.
Yeah, I mean, I think those are two of the races that could potentially be tied. But I feel good about Jefferson County, not only because of how Trump will run there, but the quality of candidates we've got there. You know, Representative Escova and Representative Shaw both proved that they've got the capacity to win those seats 2 years ago, and actually won those seats by a pretty significant margin. Representative Escova's election is a rematch. Yeah. And that was a 20-point margin 2 years ago. So we feel really good about where we are in both those.
About Boone County, a place where Trump doesn't poll as well as Boone County. Very competitive Senate race. The Democrats actually have a ground game at all levels, kind of under Stephen Weber more than anybody else.
Yeah.
What about those races? I mean, it looks like you guys are putting a lot into Chuck Basie.
Yeah, those races are always competitive, and they're competitive because they're, you know, pretty evenly split districts politically. But people look at those as Columbia seats, and they're not entirely Columbia seats. And so the recipe for success for us there has been...
And John Wright learned that, right? It's not a Columbia seat. It runs up into Randolph County.
That's exactly right. And so, I mean, that's a district that about half of it, you know, is rural. It's as rural as where we're sitting today. So Chuck's done a very good job at representing that district. His constituent service work has been really, really good. And we've also got a great candidate to succeed, Representative Rowden, in his seat. Cherie Reich is going to run very, very well there. She's got deep ties to Columbia and I think is the right kind of profile for that district.
Give me a pickup race that is a dark horse that might that folks might take a look at that they're not currently talking about.
Well, goodness, there's a few across the state. I won't pick just one, but I think if you look at where I expect us to have some success, you know, we've got there's a seat in Greene County we don't hold today. Mm-hmm. There's a seat in St. Louis County in the northern part that we don't hold. I think those will be excellent pickup opportunities for us. And I think we've got a strong message to sort of the central part of St. Louis County. And there's, you know, three seats there that I think could be competitive. So I'm really excited about where we've got candidates in tough districts because our recruiting this cycle has been very good. We've got some of the finest candidates we've had in a long time.
Hey, just give me a sleeper race somewhere in the state that people aren't looking at today.
Oh, I don't know that there's any specific one that I would call.
Does Steve Henderson win Representative Black seat?
Yeah, I think
Mike.
I think
Mike Henderson, sorry.
I think there's a good chance that he does.
Interesting. What will be the biggest issue coming into January? Whoever the governor is. Looks like the legislature will set the tone the other way.
Yeah, I think that some of the issues change depending on who the governor is, but we're going to be working on, you know, a strong agenda to work with either one. But who the governor is will probably dictate what that marquee or top ticket issue is. Well,
and every week we'll give you the poll data every week to the election here on the Hashtag Mulledge podcast. You'll hear it go public on KMOX today at 3 o'clock with Mark Reardon. Always want to thank our sponsors, Republic Services, the Carpenters Union, the St. Louis Chamber of Commerce. Thanks for joining us here on the Hashtag Mulledge podcast. We'll see you next week.